Well, hi, everybody. Welcome to Paul Listening Behind the Curtain, our opportunity to take a look at the incredible theater productions going on in and around the city of Chicago. I got blown away when I went to the opening night of The Color Purple at the Goodman Theater. I have seen this show. I've seen it on Broadway. I've seen it Drury Lane here. I've seen it. I don't know how many times. Every Crown. I don't know how many times I have seen Color Purple because I love it that much. And now it is back, but in a new and re-envisioned way, in my view, over at the Goodman Theater, directed by Lily Ann Brown. And joining me now are two of the principal cast members. And I asked for these cast members because, to me, The Color Purple is all about strong women. I don't know if that's was always the story. Alice Walker might say it is. By the way, ladies, I do have a signed copy of Alice Walker's The Color Purple. I will add that in. But we're going to talk about the power of The Color Purple. And joining me for this show is Nicole Michelle Haskins, who plays Sophia. And this was a role that was created initially, of course, by Oprah Winfrey in the movie, but by my good friend Felicia Fields, who I'm sure you know on Broadway and also in the tour. I love Felicia Fields. But also Ari Williams, who is playing Suge Avery, and both of you are amazing in this show. Congratulations, and thank you for being with me.
Thank you.
Nicole, I'm just going to tap back into what I just said. Do you know Felicia Fields, and has she seen this show yet? Because I'm sure she will.
I know of her, greatness, of her beauty, and she did come see the Drury Lane production, and she took pictures with us backstage. She's lovely. I don't know her personally, but I know of her, and there's nothing but positivity and just love anytime anyone brings up her name.
She just walks into a room and she is just magic. I saw her at Titanic and it was just a hug fest. So just had to ask. I'll just finish. Ari, do you happen to know Felicia, by the way?
Yes, she's very one of my mentors. She's amazing. She's one of the first people I called when I got the role, and she was very excited. So I love Miss Felicia. She actually saw me through the first Color Purple that I did. I met her and she coached me. So she's an amazing spirit. And
I love that. Well, tell her to give Nicole a call because she's playing. You know, she's playing that role. Playing that role. Anyway, so ladies, it's good to see you. So the Color Purple is playing through August 3rd. That is an extended date, and so that's good. And it could probably play through the end of the year if they wanted, but I know the schedule doesn't allow for it. Let me come and talk a little bit about the play itself. Not everybody has seen the play or seen the movie or the musical version. So I'm going to start with you, Sophia, if you will. Nicole, tell us a little bit about what this show is about. I said it's about strong women, but let's go broader in terms of what the plot is.
The plot, it centers Celie, who is a young woman who is married off into a very emotionally violent and tumultuous marriage with a man. He ends up taking something very special away from her physically and emotionally and spiritually over the course of their marriage. And she ends up finding her way back to God and reclaiming all of the things that were taken.
What a great way to tell the story, because there are little some secrets in there that you don't give away. And so we'll let people experience that when they see the show.
Sure.
That's a good job. And Ari, let me ask you, there's part of, I'll go back to, because your character, Suge Avery, has a special relationship. There are men in this show, plenty of them. But Suge Avery, talk about Suge and who she is as it relates to the key people, actually, in Celie's life. We should also say, this place takes place from around 1912, somewhere around then, to about 1945, 47. So it covers about a 40-year span. But the period of time, as you say, Nicole, that, you know, things have been taken from her. I just want to say, this is not the 1860s or something like that. We're in the 1900s when this thing is taking place, and yet the kinds of things we see unfold do happen. So, Ari, talk about Suge Avery and her relationship with men, because, man, she does control some men in this show.
Well, Suge is a foundational church girl. However, she takes control of her narrative and her body. This is the first generation post-slavery, so at that time, as you know, women didn't have a lot of anything. So Suge goes against the grain. She goes against the rules. She goes against society. And she takes control of everything that she can control, which happens to be men.
But you do take control, because especially your character has men just fawning over her. I mean, you know, she and you are beautiful. You're a performer. You're a singer. You know, Mr. Can't Get Enough of You, some of these characters. Nicole, I want to talk about Sophia, because You are just as strong, but in my view, in a very different way, as it relates to your relationship with Mr. Sun Harpo. Talk about the strength of Sophia in this show, because it's not Suge's strength. It's different.
I agree. I think Sophia is strong out of necessity. I think honestly, what makes the relationship in my mind, in my imagination, between Harpo and Sophia so palpable and everlasting is the fact that they're kind of energetic opposites. She's more on the masculine side. He's a bit more on the feminine side, but they find equilibrium and peace with each other. And I think he allows her to be soft in a way that society doesn't allow her to be. Because she's a tall, I use myself, you know, as because I'm playing the character, I'm a tall, big black woman. Society doesn't look at me and think, oh, she may be a victim, or oh, she may need help, or she may need softness or kindness or love or tenderness. A lot of the times, in my experience, I feel that society looks at me and be like, she got it. She all right. I could be crying in a corner, honey. And they'd be like, she fine. And I think for this particular character, I think that their relationship between Harpo and Sophia, he lets her be soft and he allows her to breathe and be a woman. Her strength is can be overt at times, but I think a lot of it is just survival. I don't think she can imagine. I think she just doesn't want to be beaten down, and she just refuses until circumstances don't allow her to refuse anymore. And we see that in the play. And there's a moment where she has to lean upon Seeley and to find strength, who in my opinion, I think that's the last person she would ever in a million years think to draw strength upon. But yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about Seeley. The role is played by Brittany Mack, who is
Brilliant.
stunning in this. I mean, I know she has to blow you all away, and I got to tell you, she's amazing. She was not able to join us for this discussion, so we're going to talk about her, and in a good way. And as I said, opening night where I sit front row center, so she's just feet away from me, and the power that she brings to it. So this is we're just going to give her props and talk about that. I have to tell you, I was up in the lounge ahead of time, and I asked how long are the different acts, and they said, well, the first act is whatever, and the second act goes about an hour, but it depends on the audience reaction to Seeley and Brittany. So I think when I was there, the first act went about 4 hours because the ovations that went on with her numbers and her singing and those notes. Now I could, this is true for all of you, so I'm not saying anything bad about anybody because you're all amazing. But to give her due, she commands that role that anybody who's played that role before would probably look at Brittany and just go that. That right there. That's the role. So, but I want to talk about, because as you told us, Nicole, Seeley loses a lot in this. We will say that there's n not an unhappy ending in this show. So she gets some stuff back. But I want to talk about how Seeley grows. You're going to answer for Brittany for me, if you don't mind. How Seeley grows because of her relationship with you. And perhaps others in her life. And Ari, let me come to you because Suge, who, you know, I'm not sure she knew who Suge was ahead of time, but when Suge shows up and shakes up the ground, Seeley gets a lot from Suge Avery.
Suge does her best to pour into Seeley. She sees Seeley. They're sharing the same man. I mean, when Suge comes in, she's kind of, well, you're with the man that I love. You're just another wife. But she ends up falling in love with Seeley because of Seeley's strength and resilience. And Seeley has a lot more strength than Suge has. So on the outside, Suge presents as a strong individual, but Seeley is taking everything that Suge couldn't, and a lot of people in that fact. I think Seeley represents the woman. The juxtaposition between an Ismene and an Antigone. Ismene stayed and survived while Antigone sacrificed and died. But without those Ismenes, the women that stayed and endured and had that strength, we wouldn't be here today. And that's a very hard thing to do. And Seeley does it with such grace and class, you overlook her. But when you really look at her, it strengthens you and it gives you the abundance to do what you need to do. I mean, that's prevalent with my character as well as Nicole with Sophia. You know, Sophia's locked up and Celie's the one that comes in and nurtures her and takes care of her and has that sweet spirit. And, you know, even with her cooking, which is something culturally, when you have someone that can cook, there's love in that food and it sustains that family and that bloodline, however long that person is there. But when they're gone, they're absent, you have that food, it's not the same, you know. So I think Celie's strength just shines in so many ways, which is what changes really this whole community and everyone around her, because of the love and the strength in the love. So,
I have a
yes.
follow-up, but first, side note. Felicia Fields and Effie Butler did a performance together years ago at Victory Gardens Theater. You're talking about the food and the cooking. They cooked the exact meal you'd want to eat for the entire audience. They cooked for the audience. And I'm talking fried chicken and mac and cheese. It was such a night. You just said that. My mind just went right there. So I just had to mention that. But let me come back to Shug Avery in terms of we know what Celie gets from Shug because we see it in her just wide-eyed reaction to her. But as this goes on, here's the thing, and see if you agree. Shug grows from Celie as well. But based on some of the things that happen in the end, relationship-wise and whatever, maybe Suge doesn't grow as much as Celie does. Maybe part of Suge just stays good old Suge.
Well, there's a part of Suge that is, I feel, is a little unhealed, because the root of it is her father's rejection, from being a pastor. And as much as Celie loves her, and as much as people, you know, can love you, there are just certain things that you have to deal with on your own, that you have to have the strength to do. They can't. You can take a horse to the water, but you can't make them drink, right? And Celie guides Suge to the water, and Suge just can't drink it because she is not yet resolve that issue. I think the movie that they did with Oprah Winfrey in 2023 with Fantasia and Taraji, they pointed out the mending that needed to happen between Suge and her father, played by, of course, the great David Alan Grier. And that resolution was seen in the film, but in the play, it's not seen as much. It's just not written in there. But the resolution at the end, when she's, you know, Celie says, "Everybody loves Suge, that never changed." And Suge says, "I love you too." She just, until she deals with that, which I believe happens maybe after, then she's not as changed as she should be, but she's thoroughly changed through Celie throughout.
Do you have an opinion as to which ending you find more satisfying for you as an actor, the movie version or the current version?
Well, you know, this is biased, but the movie version, the first movie, because God is trying to tell you something, to me, is the resolution. And coming into the show with Quincy Jones' music, Quincy Jones is from Chicago. You know, it's just, it, they didn't put in the musical, which, I mean, understandably so, Quincy Jones is Quincy Jones. But that was the resolution for me. And I do play that song throughout my process just to kind of get there. That's my opinion. I do love the musical, but in musical terms, if you're gonna add music, God is trying to tell you something. It's just that's it.
Yeah,
I also
I
miss
love that.
Celie's song. I also feel that like that is just something that was missed with this musical. Like, if I don't know what the history or the backstory about why certain songs were omitted from the musical, but I mean, God, I wish Miss Seeley's song was a part of that. Like, especially like as a like after Suge's coming to town, like in the juke joint to pay homage and to show that relationship between Suge and Seeley with Seeley's song. Oh, I just wish. I wish.
Were those decisions, Nicole? Let me say, I want to talk about Sophia for a moment, but were some of those decisions being made? Was it the script as written and that was it? Were these directorial decisions made by Lillianne, for example? I don't know.
That is a great question. We are using the original Broadway score and book for this musical, and they were not included when it was written. Why? I don't know. I think it's a great story. I can Google it later, but I don't know. I wish they had been because they are really two pieces of really beautiful and powerful music that I know Ari would eat up, but they just weren't included. I don't know why.
Okay, well, let me talk about Sophia and her relationship with Celie. Again, very different than Suge's, obviously. And I think Celie looks to Har to Sophia in a different way. She also has that familial connection because of Harpo. But talk about that relationship and what Celie gets from Sophia, and maybe what Sophia gets from Celie, or maybe she's just a teacher.
Sure. No, I think it's both. I think they both are teachers and students at different stages of their life. The play spans about 3 decades, I think, 2 to 3 decades. We meet them.
About 40 years, almost. Yeah, almost 4 decades, almost.
Yeah, we meet them as children, and then we meet them as older women. So Sophia meets Celie officially when Harpo brings his pregnant girlfriend home, and that interaction is stressed because Sophia recognizes kind of the pain and bondage that Celie is in and with this relationship to Mister. And Mister is not kind to a very pregnant and volatile Sophia. And we see that relationship play out. I think what Celie allows Sophia to see is like in the song Hell No, which is just a beautifully written song.
I love it.
There's a lot of anger and betrayal and hurt that Sophia feels, but there's also a shift where she recognizes that a lot of this isn't Celie's fault. A lot of this is what she has learned and learned through a system of survival and just trying to stay in it, and which is very difficult in any faction of life, but I think specifically for Black women, specifically for Black women in America, how do you stay afloat? How do you stay connected? How do you endure and still have life inside of you? And I think Sophia recognizes that not everyone has a choice, or not everyone has an easy choice to make. And Celie definitely does not have easy choices to make, but she makes them, and she learns, and she makes different decisions, and she sees how Sophia navigates the world. And I think she tries to emulate that in some of her decisions, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But at the end, we find that Celie and Sophia both have learned immeasurably from each other and have grown as human beings. And yeah, I think that's just life. We learn, we don't learn, and we hopefully we figure it out at the end.
And again, this notion, this theme for me that runs through this strong women theme, both your characters being so strong, and Celie, I think, who gains strength through the, I mean, she's always strong. You can't go through what she does in this play and not be strong from the get-go, but she grows in her strength. I'm sort of curious to get both your views on this, Ari. This play, as we said earlier, was set from, let's just call it around 1912 to into the 1940s. Okay, and you know, in talking to some African American actors in from that time who performed in the 40s and the 50s, and you know, and you, I'm not telling you anything you don't know. Where no, you can't use the front entrance. No, you can't stay in that hotel. You know, you might have been the star on the stage at the time, but you weren't having the life that the white folks were having and all those scenarios. And my question, Ari, for you is, Alice Walker set this play when she set it. How different would this play be if she could have done what she wanted? If she would have set this and said, you know, I'm going to actually start this in the 30s, I'm going to move it through the 60s, moved it up in time. I think if it goes back in time, I think we know what direction it goes. But if it moves up in time, does that change this play in a good way, bad way, or is it the same story?
I think it would still be in the same story. I think it'd just be a new generation. A lot of times when we discuss history and we look at history and the history in America, and we go to the Black community, we don't look at the women. So the women have had to endure and do these things over and over and over again. So like when you were saying, we're talking 1910s and 1920s, and then we look at Josephine Baker, but then we come to the 30s, and now we're Dorothy Dandridge and Lena Horne. And I've had the honor of playing both Josephine Baker and Lena Horne, and it's synonymous. They've had the same, the same struggle, the same fight, and it's sad even till this day you still see things that happened 100 years ago happening to the artists of today. It's not the same, but there are similarities. still things that haven't been dealt with because they're still put in a category. They're still not paid the best. They're still fighting to be heard in a room. They're still being over-sexualized. You're not able to really accept them unless they come across in a certain way. They can't always be themselves. They don't have the luxuries as everyone else. And we're not talking, of course, like Josephine couldn't, she headlining and had to use the back door, and her husband Papito got to use the front, and she's protesting, I don't want to do this, so I'm going back to France. Then you have Lena Horne or Dorothy Dandridge couldn't even, she put her foot in the pool in the 1940s, 50s, and they cleared out the pool of the hotel that she was staying at and performing at. It's just moved just a little. The progress has just, not too much because there's still control being maintained. So I
And that's
think.
why I wonder how somebody like Shug Avery, as a performer, right? It's interesting that you're picking up on the names of Dorothy and Lena Horne, those folks, because that Shug might have been in that crowd, depending on when this thing was going on. But you're so right. In fact, I think we know in was it I'm just drawing a blank, the movie where Lena Horne is in it, and when the movie played in the South, they had to cut her number out. She's in
Yes.
a bathtub. They had to cut her number out. I'm going to just do a little side note too. I saw Lena Horne perform in a show called Lady and Her Music, which was a one-woman show she did back in the 80s. I was sitting front row center. And if you have never heard the recording of that show, it's available. If you've never heard it, you need to hear her sing Stormy Weather. She does it twice. She does it once from kind of the way it was maybe originally done. And then she does it again later towards the end of the show when Lena has found her voice. And I mean that in the strength way. You got to hear it. You may have heard one or the other at some point or the other, but go back to that cast recording. Listen to her do both. It'll blow you away. Nicole, let me same kind of question to you, because when I think of the way Sophia fights back in this, we're not giving too much away. People need to go see the show, but Sophia fights back. Sophia stands her ground. If that kind of stuff was happening later in the 50s and the 60s, is it the same story? Maybe it is the same story in this country at that point.
I don't think it would be the same story. I think it would have the same like elemental structure of woman coming of age and finding God within herself and understanding her place within the world. I think it would have that kind of through line, but I think the story would change. The music would definitely change. I think back in that time of the 20s and the 30s, Black women had even fewer resources. But if you shift it up a few decades, 50s, 60s, I think there's a bit more available to Black women. The community, I feel, would have been widened. There are these characters, our beautiful chorus, played by these three beautiful and wonderful women in our show
I
right now.
love them.
They make up the church ladies, but there's a moment in the opening song where our opening number where they are commenting on what is actually happening in the community, what is happening to Seeley. And they make these observations, but they don't offer any assistance or help. And and I think that is relevant to the story because that is what still happens to this day. However, at that section of time, I think that is what was acceptable. You see someone struggling, you let them, you mind your business. I think if you shift it up a couple decades, I think people would be a bit more concerned. They would be a bit more involved, and they would help, in my opinion. That's what I think. But I think that's a lovely idea. What would the color purple feel like in the 50s and the 60s? I mean, the music, I think, would be so fun to hear, to like a disco beat. I don't know, like what would Shug
Well,
Avery be,
you can do that with Miss Seeley's pants. We can certainly do that with a bit of a disco to
Yeah,
it.
I know. It's a really interesting idea to consider, but I think the story is timeless. Maybe you could put this story on the moon, honey. It would still be fabulous. So
That's
yeah.
so true. And the song, and when Seeley sings, "I'm Here," and just the power in any generation that's going to have the power. Ari, the set in this show, y'all are familiar with Goodman Theater and all that. Nicole, you did Music Man and such. But what's interesting is when you're at the Goodman, you're used to sort of rooms flying in and out, and the roof just became the, I don't know, just Goodman sets. They haven't done that here. This is like a it's a beautiful set, but it's a set. So, for example, typically in The Color Purple, there is a car involved, whatever, and the car rolls onto the stage. We don't get that here. Do you have a sense, maybe in Lillian's direction here, of the decision behind, let's keep the set pretty, but we're going to keep it relatively simple. We're not even, Harpo and Sophia's home. I mean, we're not seeing a lot of that stuff. It's kind of to the imagination. Good thing? I mean, clearly it's a director's choice, I would think.
You know, the simplicity of the set, in my mind, I thought that we were going in the direction of the 2015 version with Cynthia Erivo, when there was just the wood paneling and the chairs, and you know, it was very
That was Drury Lane, right? Just all those chairs, as I remember.
Drury Lane, we had this a similar situation because it's the same set designer, Arnell, a similar kind of
Okay, then
setup.
it was somewhere else I saw where it was the chair thing. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead, Ari.
Hey, I thought it was more of the Broadway set. I saw them come to Chicago in 2015. Well, no, excuse me, not 2019. And it was very similar to that set. But what I really adored about this set is when the audience, when we started tech, we went into the house and we, you know, did the set walk. And what I realized is the set actually matched the Goodman, the Albert Theater, and the chairs are purple. And all the wood paneling kind of brought us into the same world. I know Ife did something very similar to that at A Misbehavin last year when she did the set design. She explained that she wanted the world to coexist together. So the audience was also in the studio with us. So when I got to this set, I thought it was the same thing. Okay, this is really creative. And I talked to Lil, and Lil said, no, this wasn't done on purpose. But I'm like, well, it looks really awesome to me because it invites the world, and the seats are purple. It's the color purple. You know, did you all do this on purpose? No. So, well, it's just meant to be. It's just one of those beautiful moments, one of those confirmations. So, but I enjoy the imagination of it, and being able to build and invite into the world of what our minds are seeing as actors, and you know, the costumes, and just the drop-ins of the flowers and the
Yeah.
linen and the mason jars into the juke, you know, it does create a world that I enjoy a lot.
I love that. And I know I got to let you go in a couple of moments. But Nicole, I just want to ask you as well. It sounds like you all felt, obviously, you've worked with Lillian before, or Lil, as you call her, and in this production, other places and stuff. So this time around, was it we got this? Or was it this time around going, let's talk. Let's see what it might have been a little change up. Let's move this, let's shift this. How interactive is Lillian open to cast members, especially folks like you? A lot of people came over with her from Drury Lane from that production. So was it a we know what we're doing, or was it a it's new again?
It's new again. It's a similar story, but it's a different show. I've played the role. This will be my third time, and I tried very hard to come in with a new kind of brain about it. I didn't want to recreate what I had done, and I'm older. I'm different. I'm a different actor. I'm a different person, and so taking on that and trying to place it into the role and into the ensemble that we are creating with all of these new people. No, I think Lil is very open to allowing us as artists to kind of shape the world that we are in now and the discoveries that we have found in this new retelling. I mean, I don't. It's just really, really beautiful. She's an excellent director, and she really does allow us to kind of live in our imagination with structure, and we were able to build something really beautiful together. And I think that is one of the best gifts that I can be given as an actor.
Ari, I see you nodding, and look, Lord knows you've worked in so many different plays, and Memphis over Porchlight. I'll say that again. Josephine Baker story. What in terms of directors, is Lillian, is she an actor's director?
Yes, what this, so this is my first time working with Lil. And the first thing we got were they sent us the Color Purple books to read the book, which was awesome because from the beginning it's text. And then we got in the room. There was a freedom in the room that is very rare, but it's a very beautiful thing because it allows you to organically mix and harmonize and interact with everyone, and I mean creative team as well. So there were just bonds that were growing, and the way that Lil sees things. She has a great eye and a brilliant mind. She just, okay, let's work on this a little bit more, but also just be yourself. One thing I really appreciated about her is she honed in on me just being silly in the room and enjoying the room because there are so many people that we love because we don't get to work together. I got silly and she was just like, okay, I like that. So let's keep it. It blossomed all these feels and just artistic desires into this role and in the room. And we are really having fun with one another every night, which is rare. So
That it plays so well on stage that way. And it, again, as soon as I walked out of the theater, I went up to the PR folks and I said, I got to do something with this show because I just so love, I've always loved the show, but I love this production of the show as well. And in talking to Lil, got to call her Lil, afterwards and congratulating her. But I want to thank you guys, Nicole and Ari, for spending time with me. The Color Purple, the musical, is playing at the Goodman Theater through August 3rd. Tickets can be gotten at Goodman Theater, and it's spelled the proper British way, TRE Theater. TRE, GoodmanTheater.org. I hope you guys break legs every night. That's a good thing we like to say in the theater in case anybody's watching and going, why would you say that to them? That's a way of sending you all best wishes. This is one of the greatest things Goodman has done. I was waiting all season for this show, and now I saw it. So thank you. Thank you for spending time with me. Give my regards too, to a lot of Black Ensemble members that are up on that stage from, alum from Before Tumble. I said hi, and I look forward to catching you guys again before the show closes. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
You.
And thanks for watching us here on Paul Listening Behind the Curtain.